should be.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there so that I haven't looked at your document yet, and I certainly plan to do that before the next call. But I just wanted to share what was my driving factor in exploring this subject.
Okay. Thank you, Janice. Howard, you want to enlighten us a little?
A couple of things. Of course, the monetary reform plank in the Green Party platform came as a result of the 2008 crash. You know, that kind of woke everybody up to the need to change the system, right? And so I think you're right. Yeah, we need to focus on where the pain is and the pain that people are feeling and acknowledge that, and then show them the solution to that. I also wanted to go back to Paul's thing on the local currency initiative, because I think it'd be good to have, like Kevin says, a piece on that that was couched in a way of, you know, how this can be used to help organize locally for local green parties and get people excited and thinking about money and how money works.
Well, that's something that I've got to, I probably need to just sit down and write up. I've had about three or four different irons in the fire in the last week or two, and I just haven't sat down with that, and it's something I need to prioritize.
I think it's important, though, to be concise, like Janice says, one page at a time, kind of pieces that don't overwhelm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sue Sky.
Go ahead, Sue.
I just want to agree that the shorter pieces would be better for people who don't understand this at all. You know, like keeping them simple and concise and short, and then having longer pieces later when they're caught by it. You know, they sort of, it's getting that understanding of
right.
of what money is the key, you know, to bringing them in.
That and a reading list.
And a what?
Yeah, I think a reading list of books, you know, if people are interested in getting into it.
Good idea.
That's a good idea.
I wanted to throw out something here. I was talking with Aaron Fox, who's on the campaign coordination committee, and he was asking me for maybe like a short one-page piece that he could give to people who are running for office, who need to know what our position is on various things. He asked me for a one-piece summary from the Peace Action Committee. And I think that it didn't occur to him that this would be a good thing also to have from our committee. So that for people who are running for office and want to know what's in our platform with regard to monetary reform, then they would have all that information summarized. So they would at least have the ability to address that in some manner in their campaigns. So
that's in our mission.
Yes, right, exactly. So, but you know, we need, I think, something directed specifically at that so that, you know, they would know exactly what our position is what is in our platform so they can discuss it.
Sue Stack.
Right.
Go ahead, Sue.
So, Rita, my question then would be, as a person running for office, they're running for different offices, right? They're running. They could be running at the national level, the state level, or the local level.
Right.
And so, knowing what our platform is would maybe be different for each of them.
Possibly.
Yeah, it might be a good idea to have one for local offices and one for national offices.
Yeah, right.
That's how I got into monetary reform. with running for office.
You know, even the people running for state offices, I think, ought to have some awareness of what's going on there and, you know, in the monetary system.
Maybe.
Because the states have a lot of their own banking rules and such, and I think they need to know that if they're running for a state office as well.
Right. How the system drains the states of their wealth.
Right. The problem, you know, and the state can't create money like, or can't run a deficit like the federal government can. And, and I think that maybe some people running for state offices don't realize that states simply can't do that.
But can they, don't they sell bonds like the national government?
Yeah, they can sell bonds, and they can have a debt and mainly they do that for long-range investments. They don't normally
But ultimately they have to pay it back, right?
Yes, they have to pay it back.
Yeah, that's the difference,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So capital projects have bonds.
Yeah.
Like New York City is over $100 billion in debt with bonds for capital project.
Well, you know, that's New York City, you know.
No, but what I'm saying is it's not like they can't run a deficit. You know, to say you can't run a deficit makes you feel like, oh, they're in good shape, you know.
They can't borrow, but they have to work into their budget paying back what they borrow. So.
Kevin Stack.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I just want to put in the old saw about, you know, if you owe the bank $1,000, you have a problem. But if you owe the bank $1,000,000, they have a problem.
I don't know about that.
So that's.
I think
we
all have a
Yeah.
Let me ask something else to Rita, because I'm curious. When you say that the national government can't run a deficit, right? Or can run a deficit. You said it can run a deficit.
Yeah.
What do you mean by running a deficit?
I mean they can spend more money than they take in.
But that's creating treasury bonds and selling them, right?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, but they would have deficit spending then.
By the way, last year the government, I saw an article by Bloomberg that was saying that last year the government borrowed $1 trillion, and it was expecting to do the same thing again this year.
Kevin Stack.
Go ahead, Kev.
Well, the federal deficit is reaching these levels. Now, in my talk on the Federal Reserve system, you know, and as I rag on it and complain about it throughout this talk, I do point out that, you know, we have this exponential debt, and the doubling time on the debt is, and the federal debt, and all of the whole monetary system is basically around 10 years. So the federal debt is really closer to 8 years or 9 years. So these kind of numbers, like the $1 trillion federal debt or federal deficit and stuff, this is just going to become the commonplace thing. And, you know, but it's just the inflation of the money supply, so.
And it means that the money system is going to break down.
Really. I mean, you had it in 2008. I mean, it's just a system that is becoming less and less workable for all kinds of reasons. I mean, there's just so much involved in money that it's not just balancing accounts. I mean, you have to have things to spend the money on. People have to be involved. You have to have the flows, the relationships. You know, all of this stuff is involved because it's really a social function more than, you know, I don't know what, a pot of gold or something at the end of the rainbow that people think of it as. But anyway.
Yeah, the system's a clunker. It breaks down about every 10 years.
Well, it has to, because
some more than others, sometimes worse than others, but it depends on how big a bubble it is.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. The debt compounding, as far as I can tell, what happens to it is basically it just it's not, the system is not socially coherent enough to keep things in line where there's enough money distributed around in the economy so that the necessary doublings in the exponential growth are balanced so that the people who have these debts that have doubled can pay them. You know, the debts will double, but the available money will not. And it won't even come close. Just like, you know, how the corporations want all the money and they don't want the workers to have any. And then they find out that if they want to have a consumer economy, they have to loan all this money to people that can't pay it back. I mean, that's just the logic of the system. If that makes sense.
I might point out too that it's kind of what they call the business cycle is when, you know, the loan payments exceed the loans being made. And that's when we have recessions and stuff. And that's kind of like the business cycle. It's kind of a pump and dump scheme, in my opinion.
I have a question. Just listening to this. And this is my concern about the language we use when we write these articles. So when we say the government runs a deficit, are we saying the government goes into more debt?
Yep.
I would say the government spending exceeds the tax money that's available to meet the expenses or their spending plan or whatever.
Right, but
yes, and I think it's important to say that, and rather than using terms like deficit. I think it's important to say what we mean rather than using jargon.
Yeah. We can explain deficit spending.
You just call it debt spending?
Debt creation.
Spending more money than you have, you know, is basically it.
Janice back.
Go ahead, Janice.
Well, I became interested in public banking because I had the feeling that public banking could handle the interest rate part of the problem, which means that public banking can pretty much decide whether or not it even charges an interest rate, and if it does, it can be a much smaller interest rate than private banking is charging now, which is where the doubling of money happens, because all you do is divide whatever time you have left into 72, and that tells you your interest rate, or vice versa. So your interest rate in 72 tells you how much time you have before the debt doubles. So that's one factor, is looking at public banking as a serious piece of this. And the other thing is social economics. The current economic system, and I'm working on this, I'm doing writing on this, doesn't account for externalities or social costs. These are assumed to be zero or not to exist, and which is completely false and wrong. And it's one of the major flaws in the set of assumptions of the current system. So I think we should talk about that too, because if you have a socially equitable economic system, you theoretically increase the creativity and productivity of the workers and of the whole system. And the gains can be much greater than anything you can forecast in a quantitative analysis approach, because you go way past your set of assumptions in what's produced just by freeing a public and giving them a working situation, health care, job security, things like that, that completely upgrade the quality of what they produce. So I think these are things that need to be taken into consideration as well.
I agree, and economics uses these models and sometimes they're just not, they're not realistic based on reality or whatever you want to say, and they don't take into consideration the damage done to the environment or the through extraction of the resources or the cost of restoration and cleanup that they're apt to incur. And that's just totally left out of these economic models, and this is why we're partially why we're in the situation we're in now. So,
Howard, Scott.
I don't have a great regard for economics anyway. You know, it's a social science.
Alfred Stack.
I think Howard was.
Have you come across Janice? Have you looked into GPI instead of GDP as a, you know, as a replacement for GDP, the General Progress Index?
I'm not familiar with that model. So I would love to follow up on it.
Take a look on Google GPI, the Genuine Progress Index. I think you'll find some valuable stuff there.
Yeah, because that can be a part of my proposal on how we change the economic system, because I'm working on that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of economists would agree, too. And Thomas Piketty was extremely critical of American economic academic community, finding them very small-minded and very unwilling to stretch beyond their limited set of definitions and assumptions.
Yeah.
Well, as Upton Sinclair said, if your job depends on you not understanding something, you won't understand it.
The same way that the medical profession monetizes our illness, therefore we can clearly conclude that they're not going to be very happy about us getting well and them not making money off of us being sick.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Kind of like why bankers don't like public money.
Yeah.
Yes. This week
we
I plan on sharing
from them.
The Public Banking Institute made a really nice animated film that's about 5 minutes long that we might enjoy looking at as concerns their contribution to what we're working on, the public banking piece. It's well done, and I'll share a link with the group as soon as sometime after we get off this call.
Okay, yeah, you can, you know, anytime you want, you're welcome to use the listserv to send stuff to us if you think there's something that we're interested in.
How do I do that? Just by reply all?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Well, there is an email address for the...
It's going to be, the email address for the listserv will be on the email.
Okay.
Well, yeah. It's also on, you know, I think, did I send you a welcome letter, Janice?
Yes, I'm sure you did.
Okay, if you can find the welcome letter, there is, I'm sure I gave you the address for the listserv and also the link to our Google Docs other things. And if you want, if you can't find it, let me know.
Rita?
Yes.
Both of those links are on each of the minutes each week at the very top.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't. Well, you know, I have to know how to get to the minutes, though, you know. So you don't have a link to the Google, although if you have a direct link to the minutes, then you can get it. So.
Also, Sustat
normally sends out the minutes, she's telling us that if you go look at the minutes, there is a link in the minutes.
At the very top, of the document. Sustat.
Go ahead, Sue.
A couple things. I wanted to reply to Janice talking about working on changing the economic system. So if I'm part of a group of people and we're studying parity economics, which is based on family farmers, and historically been around since the 1930s and had for a period of around 10 years been national law of the country. And I'd be glad to get together with you offline and share some of that. And the other thing is, the 5 minute, like when we have things like 5 minute videos and stuff, I think we could also share them on this call and then discuss them, because I also see this call as partly educating each other.
Okay, good idea. Okay.
Has Howard already spoken, or?
Did Howard?
I think so.
Are you on stack, or you done?
Yeah, hoping to be. No, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. What you were mentioning about the costs of repairing the land, repairing the air, pollution, all that, and even the cost of renting money, that's all called externalities. And, you know, yeah, they do their level best to avoid counting that when it comes to any sort of economic production. You know, they want to privatize all the profits and socialize all of the losses,
right?
Like,
yeah.
Externalities to the public,
yeah.
Or act as if they don't count. And also, for some reason, they never ever take into account the fact of the drag or the friction or the how would you say, counterproductiveness of charging interest on money. And as we were kind of like implying, eventually that causes some sort of recession or collapse, because the interest rate is always much higher than the actual production or gain that can be made from the money sometimes. I think that for industries, maybe it's
right.
Okay, but when it comes to the public, we're always charged much more than the increase in our incomes from borrowing the money or doing anything else with any money that we borrow. And
that's why we have four times the debt than we have money.
Right. Kevin Stack.
There's four times more debt than there is money supply.
Exactly. That's it. That's all I wanted. Oh, one more thing. From my experience with a guy who was very valuable, he was an economist, he was a top dog in an academic institution. He was very willing to talk about economics, but when it came to the 2008 crisis, suddenly he was silent. Suddenly he had no answers. Didn't want to break it up into parts or discuss it in public. It's like, you know, how did we get here, or what are the solutions? You know, what is the problem exactly? No, we didn't want to talk about that. And, you know, it's like, he was so hooked into the Federal Reserve. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't want to say conspiracy, but it's kind of like we were saying there, you know, he was dependent upon not knowing what the problem was, because his livelihood depended upon it. And I think there's so many economists who are like that. They're hoping to somehow get in good with the Federal Reserve or major banks. I don't know. So that's all.
That's who they work for, right? Who, if you're an economist, yeah. Who do you work for?
Exactly.
Pretty much a banking deal.
Industry, yeah. That's all I want to say.
Kevin?
No, yeah. It's interesting. When I read articles about the economy and so forth, I try to read articles that are written by economists who do not work for the government mm-hmm. and are not part of a politically stacked think tank, or are not hooked up with a large corporation that puts profits over people. So if you can find an independent, if you will, economist, you're more apt to have a better picture of what's really going on, you know. So
Richard Wolff, Democracy at Work.
Richard Wolff is a good one to read.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to say it's Wolfe. I think that's how you spell his last name.
Okay.
Democracy at work.
No.
No?
W-O-L-F-F-O-L.
F-F.
Ah, okay.
Double F.
Double F-E.
There you go.
Okay.
Sue Stack.
No,
go ahead, Sue.
Just one comment about Richard Wolff. He won't talk about the money system.
Oh, okay.
Will not. We've tried to get him to. He won't do it.
And he knows about it. But he won't talk
weird.
About it.
How do you suppose that is?
We've told him about it.
It's not weird. It's not weird.
Is he associated with any business or government or anything at all? Or?
He's an academic.
University.
He's an academic.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Which university?
I think he's
in Massachusetts.
They call it the new university or the new college in New York. And I'm not sure, it might be an offshoot of Columbia.
Oh, the new school?
But it may be independent. The new school. It's something like that.
Yeah.
The new school.
New School of Social Research, isn't that the complete name of it?
Yeah,
that could be.
Sue Stack.
Go ahead, Sue.
Oh dear, what was I going to say? Something about Richard. Oh, I know. Just what I've learned over the years. I was at the Left Forum. Most years over the last 8 years, I've been parts of groups that have given talks. And one year we were giving this talk, and one of the people on the panel, who's a friend of mine, Alan Smith, so he gave his talk, and in the middle of the talk he was talking about different books he read on money, and he quoted from one of the books a conversation between Paul Krugman and the monetary reformer who was writing the book. And the monetary reformer asked him, well, why don't you talk about the money system? You know, because Paul Krugman has a pretty big audience. And he said, and Krugman has never come forward to say this wasn't true. And Krugman said, because in my graduate school, my advisor told me that if I talked about the money system, I would not have a career. And that's what happens. That's why, I mean, think of it. Nobody in the main media of the whole United States talks about the money system. That's an incredible amount of control. But that's one of the ways they
do it.
Not
taught in any
school. That's how they do it, you know, with the academics, you're not going to have a career. That's what we're up against.
Noam Chomsky discusses that in Manufacturing Consent with regard to the media, but it's the same power that shuts everybody up,
mm-hmm.
not just the media.
Yeah. And it's just, I think I, did I share this last week? I shared it with one of my other groups. Oh, I shared it with a group of friends this week. I was reading, and tell me if I've shared this. I was reading Anthony Sutton's book. Did I share this? Anthony Sutton wrote a whole lot of books.
Yeah.
And he wrote a trilogy about Wall Street. And one of them was called Wall Street and FDR. So it's an analysis of FDR's history and the influence of Wall Street on the New Deal. And in that, he had this quote from 19... And what Sutton is he's very reputable. He's ignored because he's very reputable. He always goes to source materials. So he had this quote from 1917, March of 1917, a month before Woodrow Wilson asked the Congress to go to war in Europe. And in it, it was from the U.S. Congress, the congressional record. And this congressman had put in the congressional record, and Sutton said he was supported by a whole lot of congressmen. He put in the congressional, I guess he put it in there as a way of trying to deflect the country from, you know, going along with this. And he said, gentlemen, he said, J.P. Morgan Chase and Rockefeller have gone out and hired people to identify the media, the newspapers in this country that are the most influential. And they hired these 12 people. They came up with 140-some-odd newspapers around the country. They whittled it down to 25, and Morgan and Rockefeller and their cohorts went to those 25 papers and bought the editorial pages of those 25 papers. So this was 1917. You know, think of where they're at now, you know, in terms of controlling our media, you know. I love history. This is my thing. I love history.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Sutton's great because, like you say, he goes into the source material and he goes into the books, into the financials of what was going on, you know, and it tells a story there.
And it's all this original source stuff, you know, that you know, I went to college, high school and college, and we didn't go back to the sources at all, you know. And that's one of the things that is really, I'm learning is really important to understand how the world works, you know. Yeah,
that's what Stephen Zarlinga did in his research on his book, was go to the sources of monetary knowledge all the way back.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Janice Beck.
Go ahead, Janice.
All of this wonderful book quoting and author quoting is news to me, and I would really benefit if we put together a bibliography, and I know we've talked about doing that, but could we start doing that, maybe put it on the Google Docs page, and all of us add our contributions to it?
I think we've got some of that information somewhere. Yes, we can definitely.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good bibliography there that Govert Schuller put together.
Yeah. So yes, we have some of that out there, you know. So.
Could
Kevin Stack.
Go ahead, Kev.
You know, in terms of these books, one thing that puts me off, for one, is that I have trouble reading. I'm just too lazy to do it. But the other thing is that, you know, these books are kind of expensive, and having to buy them and find them and all that kind of stuff. Right. Sovereign money.
I bought a book this week.
You're just showing off. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so you bought a book. All right. So anyway, what I'm leading up to is some kind of a sharing program. But the other thing too that has just popped into my head as a way of doing material and also helping ourselves is to actually write book reviews. This might be something really good, because you can talk about how an author is not consistent with the Green Party, because they missed this point or they missed that point. But you're writing a review, and I think it's a good way. You'll get more interest in your writing that way as well, possibly. But, okay, so, and then one more point I wanted to make on The Economist. I had thought some years ago, kind of, a simplistic thought, but I thought that one of the things about economics is that it has to have a point of view. It has to be economics for somebody. It's not just economics in general. You know, like how do you increase efficiency or maximize benefits if you don't have a particular person or a particular interest in mind? So anyway, that was my thought on that.
Okay.
Sue said.
Go ahead, Sue.
I'm wondering if there's someone on the committee who might want to take on the bibliography and making sure that it's in a useful form, just because I you know, just having a whole list of things would put me off. It would be like overwhelming. You know, it has to be presented in a certain way, especially keeping in mind that most of the people, hopefully, that we attract to the committee don't know about the system, current system, you know?
Janice Stack.
Go ahead, Janice.
I will volunteer to do the bibliography, and as an added step, I will add research on my library free audio and ebook service called Hoopla, Hoopla. And if any of these books are located on Hoopla, especially in audiobook form, which is very helpful for me, I will add that, and people can just have them at their fingertips. I'm listening to 20 hours of Naomi Klein right now. This changes everything because I have to prepare for an environmental month. I'm going to a conference, and our TV show in Houston called Greenwatch is doing an environmental piece on February the 27th. So I want to be fully prepared with 20 hours of Naomi Klein because she did such a good job. So, and that's audiobook form. So I will do both the bibliography and try to locate free audiobook and ebook sources for these books.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'm doing it for myself, but I'm very happy to share it.
That's the best. That's the best way.
That reminds me, you know, I have through our local library access to a lot of free videos and things that I kind of forget about from time to time, where I can find different things. I'll make a note to myself to try to remember that and see what I can find, because there are some very interesting things.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't know that we have a whole lot to discuss in the way of agenda items tonight. So I don't know. Is there anything in particular that somebody wants to continue?
Are we pretty much finished with the bylaws?
Yeah, they've already been submitted to the steering committee to be voted on, or discussed and voted on it at the national committee level.
Excellent.
So those of us that are delegates, we should be prepared to defend or promote our yes vote on our bylaws.
Yeah, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin, are you still on the national committee?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Sustak.
I don't know that we'll have any problem with it. I haven't been on the national committee long enough to know how much flack we get when rules come up for approval. So I don't know what to expect, but we'll deal with it. I'm laughing. This cat just walked in front of Kevin's camera.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry.
This is for Facebook. Let's get something here for Facebook. Okay. Here, come on. You can shine for the camera there. See? Say hi.
Anyway, we can keep you posted about what's going on with the discussion on our rules. I can't imagine that the national committee will try to tear our rules apart. I don't know, but we'll find out.
Sue Stack.
Go ahead, Sue.
Two things. I just hope MMT doesn't make a hoopla on the national committee about our bylaws. But anyway, before we leave the topic of our documents.
Yes.
Can we, as a group, come up with the next, you know, we talked about this introductory document that Howard and I worked on, and can we come up with a subcommittee that's going to actually have that available? So maybe we want to share it with the national committee or something like that to outreach to the state parties or whatever?
I guess I'll have to look at the document. I don't know. I'm not sure what you're putting in it. So,
do we want to look at it now?
Have we got it out there in Google Docs somewhere?
Yeah.
Well, what is it called or where is it? Can you tell me?
Hold on.
Okay. Find it yet? No?
I think it's under documents for review and comment.
Okay.
There's a short version and there's a long version.
Okay. So that's the same one that we sort of started working on to answer the query from the co-chair of Utah?
I think so. Is that what people were referring to as the one that Howard and I worked on?
I don't know. Is that
yes, that's what I was referring to, yes.
Okay. Okay, I don't know which one it is.
It's under documents for review and comment.
Yeah, but what's the name of the document?
Flyer, committee introduction.
Okay, there's two of them.
Yeah, one's a short version.
All right. I guess I'll have to pull it up to see the whole thing on it. Okay. One short version. Are you talking about the short version or the long version?
I don't know. I don't know what the committee wants.
That's the trouble with committees. No, I'm just kidding.
I think the short version is what we really need, the one pager, isn't it? I can't get on the internet right now, or I'd be looking for it myself.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we need to have somebody figure out exactly what we're going to do with it.
Have we sent anything off to Utah?
Yes, that's gone already. Howard sent it.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope they liked it.
We haven't heard from him, so I don't know.
Janice Stack.
Go ahead, Janice.
Can we put the discussion of the short and long versions of the flyer on the agenda for next week and possibly move to adjourn?
Yes, we can do that.
Yes, good idea.
Thank you.
I second that motion.
Okay. Howard's on the phone. I guess it doesn't matter. We could probably adjourn while Howard's on the phone.
Yeah.
did you receive that email I sent you about the railroad thing?
I did. I thought that was very interesting.
Yes, I looked at it too.
Oh, cool, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it needs more work, but you know, hey, you know.
It's kind of, yeah, and this is leading to, I'm guessing, some more information on the rails, you know, the renewable energy tied in with the railroads and all that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Basically, you know, we've got this report card from the, I think it's ASCE, American Society of Civil Engineers.
Okay.
You know, they do an annual report card on America's infrastructure.
Right.
And various portions of the infrastructure, you know, have very low grades. I think airports still have an A or something like that, or A minus. But it seems obvious to me that if we're going to finance something like a railroad, you know, what good does that do unless the entire economy around the railroad is doing well? And it seems to me that if you're going to borrow a whole bunch of money, for corporate bonds for this railroad thing, borrow it to actually give, not lend, but give to the local region around there, the local governments, basically because the federal government has not, they backed off of paying for infrastructure investment in the early 80s. They started cutting back and cutting back, and basically they, I don't want to say that they stopped, but they're very selective. And public-private partnerships are not the answer. You know, they don't just automatically give money to local and regional governments or state governments for infrastructure. You know, it's usually the federal government that's paid for that stuff, and we just need to do it again.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, one of the things about a colony is you don't really want to waste a lot of money on infrastructure in the colony. I just threw that out there, you know. Okay.
I understand, yes.
Howard, we kind of decided that we're going to adjourn soon. So. But you were on the phone. We thought about just all abandoning you, you know.
Well, I was just thinking that I was going to leave the meeting.
Okay, well, we'll have to adjourn then, I guess.
Okay, yeah, we'll
okay.
So, okay. Well,
right.
we'll all be Greek then, huh?
Terrific. Good hearing from y'all.
Okay, well, good night, y'all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Book and et cetera.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.